It's Marketplace Tech for Monday, October 24th. I'm Molly Wood in for Ben Johnson. Today, we are kicking off a series of interviews that'll air all week, focusing on technology and voting. It's a hot-button issue since the 2016 election cycle has been marked by unprecedented hacking and cybersecurity issues. And security is top of mind after a massive cyber attack that took down dozens of websites on Friday. Michael Alvarez is professor of political science at Caltech. He's also co-director of the Caltech MIT Voting Technology Project. Mike, how far away are we from feeling okay about voting online?
You know, the internet as it exists now wasn't really built for this kind, those kinds of interactions. It's not a very secure and very safe place, as we know. There's cyber attacks that we read about every day. So what we need to do is figure out better ways to secure information as it's moving back and forth from a voter to an election official. And we also need to figure out better ways to secure the hardware on the end of the election official, where all this important information will be received and tabulated. You know, that research is ongoing. And at some point, I hope that each of those kind of problems is solved and that we might be able to be in a world where we can securely vote online.
But what does that mean for you then in the Voting Technology Project? Are you back to baby steps?
There have been a lot of important changes and a lot of ways in which technology has improved the process. In many states, people can register online. In many states, you can request your absentee ballot online. You can go to a website and check to see that your absentee ballot has been received. You can get your materials. You can research things online. But, you know, in polling places, in many places, now, again, this is one of the things about elections in the U.S. that's complicated, is that elections are, you know, run at the state and county level. So, you know, lots of things are happening in many counties that just don't sort of percolate over to other counties.
Can you think of any sort of great examples off the top of your head, localities that are doing a really good job or best practices that you'd like to see spread to other parts of the country?
One that we've highlighted is New Mexico, where in New Mexico they've made some really important steps towards developing a more secure, usable, accessible, and friendly voting process, especially in the sort of Albuquerque area, where people can show up in a convenient place in the days leading up to an election. They can get confirmed that they're an eligible voter in that area. They can get their ballot printed for them on the spot. They can then, fill it out, and then they can use the machines in the polling place to check that they haven't made any simple mistakes before they're sent off for tabulation.
Michael Alvarez is co-director of the Caltech MIT Voting Technology Project. Mike, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
A little follow-up to that hack on Friday, which seemed to hit a lot of media sites. Ironically, a Politico report last week predicted that the media could be vulnerable to cyber attacks on election night. For example, an attack on the Associated Press, because its newsroom produces election night results that are used by all kinds of other media outlets. Security experts suggested that Friday's hack could be a practice attempt. So hopefully everyone is battening down the hatches as November 8th approaches. A new study on the number of women in the U.S. computing workforce shows that the share of women in tech is declining from 37% in 1995 to 24% today, potentially even further by 2025. Now, granted, the industry has grown, so percentages are tricky, but it's still not a good trend line. The research is a partnership between Accenture and the nonprofit Girls Who Code, and the goal is to understand what can be done to increase the proportions of women in tech. Julie Sweet is CEO of Accenture in North America. Julie, how closely have people been looking at this problem?
I think that there's been a lot of individual focus, particularly on college, and no one had just sort of taken a step back to say, let's do something. And obviously, it's expensive and it takes a lot of months to do, to really say we need the comprehensive look, junior high school, and college.
And did you come up with any recommendations, some of the steps that parents and teachers can take?
Yes. So in junior high school, because junior high school girls who are exposed are four more times likely to go into computing, the areas there to really interest them is, first of all, to both have the classes and to have women teachers. What we've seen is that for boys, whether the teacher is a man or a woman doesn't really matter. But for girls, they're far more likely to be interested if they have a woman teacher.
And for more on that, let's bring in Reshma Sajani of Girls Who Code. Hi, Reshma.
Thank you for having me.
The study, among other things, calls for more women to teach computer science in schools. Often, of course, women who are educated in computer science go to the private sector or could get better jobs there. How will you encourage them to teach?
Yeah, women and men. I mean, it's interesting, right? If you're graduating from computer science at college, you can go get a private sector job at Facebook making, you know, $120,000 as a software engineer, or you can go teach in schools making $40,000 without benefits. I mean, it's a huge opportunity cost. We need to put more computer science teachers into the classroom, and we have to offer incentives to do that, which, whether that's loan forgiveness, you know, whether that's making sure that, you know, there's some value of going into the classroom right after you graduate school. Because, again, the opportunity cost is too great for a computer science graduate coming out of college right now. You know, we almost need to create like a teaching core for computer science, and I think it's absolutely possible.
And now you run a program that's dedicated to teaching girls how to program. How will you take into account the results of this report to design future classes?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most powerful takeaway for me was that the problem is getting worse. Yeah. And that really scared me. I think universal computer science education is incredibly important, but it's not sufficient. And so as we have popularized computer science, guess what? We've activated more boys. And so what I always say is I want curriculum developed in the eyes of a 16-year-old young black girl from Georgia, right? If I can figure out how to get her excited about computer science, I can get all the rest of them.
Reshma Sajani is the founder and CEO of Girls Who Code. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Marketplace Tech was produced today from the Reveal Studios at the Center for Investigative Reporting. I'm Molly Wood. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.